Do you think you'd ever find yourself reading the con books?
You know, I'm not quite sure.
This is really, I mean, because I know you're a pretty big fantasy book guy.
Right.
You know, and I was listening to, I mean, I probably would never find myself reading them, but they sounded pretty interesting.
Right, right, right.
You know, they sounded like, they sounded like something you'd enjoy anyway.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I've really even seen them. I mean, I know.
I have seen it since I watched the featurette on the con book trilogy.
Right. When were they released? Does anybody know?
I think, you know, not too long ago. I mean, I honestly have no idea. I just remember.
They don't really give a year as to when they were released.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure all three of them have been are out now.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you're right.
And I do recall running into a couple of them, you know, at various bookstores. But
the Christmas gift for my brother. Sweet.
There you go. You're welcome, Moses.
Did they talk about for that that one effect shot that we discussed earlier? Did they talk about like what they had originally planned to do for it in the commentary at all? Something about like using like some type of like laser to transform a rock instead of actually doing the CG sequence.
Yeah, I do recall hearing something about, you know, a potato in a microwave or something like that.
And then they were actually going to put that rock, you know, do the same rock thing in CG.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another guy came up with an idea of doing the whole planet, mm-hmm. making the whole planet do it. So I just wondered if they mentioned that in the commentary.
I think it's either mentioned in the commentary or one of the extras.
Gotcha. Not right now, at least.
Okay.
All right. It's your mom's birthday?
Thursday.
Oh, that's right. You told me that. Yeah, I like this scene.
Yeah, that's the scene.
You know, this scene does work.
You got Chekhov holding a gun to Kirk. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah. You're excellent.
You know, one of the... interesting little sound effect there on somebody's being incinerated.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh. But I like what's mentioned and acknowledged about Ricardo Montalban's performance and how understated it is, and that's just one of the things that makes it as, you know, good as it is. Because, you know, he's, you know, I don't think he ever, I think except at one point, like in his very first scene, like he never raises his voice, you know, he's very understated and, you know, that's what makes a good villain, I think.
Like I did. That's right.
Check out Survivor.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
He's pretty nasty right there, too. He's like, bro. It's pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. Well, who did the who was the effects supervisor, Brian? Wasn't he This is my favorite line.
Yeah, you must say.
No, he's like,
you don't do anything like that.
What is the line? And he says, "You keep missing the target."
Yeah, that's too. Cute. really good.
Ken Ralston.
That's right, and he worked on the Back to the Future trilogy, I think.
I believe so.
Yeah, he really is acting in this movie, isn't he?
Yeah.
Come down here. Yeah, he is absolutely rolling in this movie. Sorry, I can't. This has been too many years.
I mean his performance is so good,
yeah. That's what I was getting at, you know, that's why...
I mean, the fact that I'm just repeating these lines, you know, mm-hmm. means that they're just delivered, you know, with real emotion behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the Oscar clip. Look at that face.
Didn't in one of the supplements, didn't Ricardo Montalban talk about how his approach to, how he had a hard time sort of getting a feel for the character when he first signed on for Wrath of Khan, and then didn't he watch, like, Space Seed over again?
Mm-hmm.
And, he started to finally realize, okay, this is how the character needs to be played. And
yeah, that, and, you know, also just after having a discussion with Nicholas Meyer mm-hmm. about, you know, how to underplay it.
Yeah.
And not, well, overdo it. You mm-hmm. know, and... Oh, yes. mm-hmm. And what was the name of the, you know, Brian, I feel horrible, but what was the name of the producer? Steve, or something, Bennett, Harb Bennett.
Yeah.
And he more or less took over the Gene Roddenberry role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was sort of the creative consultant for the show. And like Nicholas Meyer, he actually was not a lifelong Trek fan.
Mm-hmm.
And
I admire that some of those guys, you know, show that type of respect to a franchise like mm-hmm. that, you know, even though they're not real lifelong fans.
Yeah.
This is about all the Carol Marcus, James C. Kirk backstory you get.
Yeah.
It's right here. How old is Kirk supposed to be?
Thought he was supposed to be around how old?
Mm-hmm.
Thought he was supposed to be around 50.
I mean, yeah.
Because they talked about it, and they talked about not specifically stating his age, but they kind of, you know, wanted to sort of imply at least that he was around in his 50. He was 50,
mm-hmm.
or around that age, so... Oh, just silence all around.
Well, I mean, again, we're just watching the movie.
But we're watching them not say anything, and we're not saying anything.
It's
weird.
Brian, what were some of your reservations about this movie?
I know you said this, you didn't really like this movie, Brian, but I haven't really heard hate from you yet.
I mean, the thing is, it's like, I never meant to imply that I hate the movie.
Right.
Because I don't hate the movie. In fact, I do think it's, you know, it's starting to grow on me. I don't have the appreciation for it that you guys do,
right.
Is the thing. I mean, I admire it. It's an entertaining movie. It's a well-made movie. You know, and I've felt that way more and more I've seen it.
I love this cue right here.
But, I don't know. For some reason, I just don't get the buzz off of it you guys do. I mean...
What was the first time you saw it?
Oh, God. I can't remember. I mean...
You saw it like a kid?
I know I saw it when I was a kid.
Gotcha.
I can't remember how long ago that was. It was a good long while ago.
Gotcha.
I think, you know, we more or less grew up in the generation where Star Trek was more of a film franchise than it ever was a TV franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when we grew up. I remember growing up and saying, oh, another Star Trek movie? I remember, like, when I was, I guess, around, you know, 7th or 8th grade, the Next Generation, you know, starting. But, you know, before that, I mean, that's all I knew of Star Trek was that it was a film franchise.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I guess maybe that's in my family. I mean, I know my dad probably, you know, watched Star Trek before, you know,
mm-hmm.
the actual show. So, you know, when the movie came out, he was all right, cool about it, got his kids into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of the thing with me is, I mean, as I did watch, you know, some of the Star Trek movies growing up and stuff like that, but, and I really hate to bring up the rivalry, but I guess I was always more of a Star Wars person. Mm-hmm. You know, I really, and I do kind of hate to bring that up because it's like, it's the universe, it's the eternal, you know, rivalry in science fiction nowadays.
Right.
It's like Star Wars versus Star Trek.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, they're both unique.
Exactly.
And both deservingly have a place.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I can enjoy this movie, and I can watch it a lot, and I mean, I've watched it, you know, I've started to watch it a bit when it's been on AMC recently, so.
Yeah, AMC has been running AMC's been running, I think, all the Star Trek movies a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, Khan is usually the one that I end up hitting. I usually don't see any of the other ones.
I exaggerate. That's classic right there.
Yeah.
I like this exchange between Kirk and Spock right here. This is also added footage. That young man is my son. I like how the second act just kind of, you know, I like how the second act stops to develop the story further.
Yeah.
And then you go into this really, I think, breathtaking final battle sequence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I really do. I like the dynamic between the two, the strategies of Kirk and Khan, and, you know, and it feels natural. I mean, you know, there's not, which I think kind of sort of has happened with some of the more recent Star Trek films, is there isn't as much character or story, I don't think, as much as there is in this one in particular. This particular Star Trek film tells a really good story. It tells a really good story. Is that James Horner right there,
yep.
Brian? Yes, it is.
Nope.
Nope.
Wow, is this out of footage?
I don't know.
That I've never seen it, but I've never seen this beforehand. I think.
I kind of like that all these guys are trainees. And this is more Western.
And they had their first real mission against Khan. So.
Mm-hmm.
But
so much the better.
Yeah, this final sequence in the nebula here kind of reminds me of what two submarine battles would look like. You know?
Well, yeah.
And they acknowledge that.
They acknowledge that? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Very, 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 very much so, yeah.
Right, because I used to play a lot of submarine video games, and, you know, Hunt for the Red October is like a family thing, you know, so submarine warfare has always been something that, you know, the guys in my family have always been interested in. And this plays out exactly like how two submarines would fight in the middle of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Nicholas Meyer really acknowledges, is that this entire final battle is very quote unquote U-boat inspired.
Right.
I love this score, by the way. Did I mention that?
I think so.
Yeah, I love this score. I wanted to listen to it on the way over here, but I couldn't find it. I'm pissed off about it. What is he doing with his sweater?
Doesn't Nicholas Meyer mention that?
He does. He kind of points that out, and he's.
I never noticed it. I personally don't care one way or the other. So.
That's a little
Lord, pass me.
About to go.
Khan, I'm laughing at the superior intellect. A little like eggs him on there. Yeah, Khan rarely ever gets really angry, but when he does, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He starts lifting people with one hand. That's what he knows that.
This is all done in a cloud tank, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm after listening to this commentary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you know, the director's commentary is not that, you know, like Brian was mentioning earlier, you know, the director's commentary is not that. He really does not talk about the movie that much, does he, Brian?
Not a whole. I mean, he talks about more of his approach to the movie than he talks about. You know, it's like, okay, well, I mean, you know, here we're watching this, here we're watching this, mm-hmm. Here's how we did this and stuff like that. You do get parts of that, but. It's not as excessive as some other filmmakers do. But there's also a visual effects feature
mm-hmm.
on the DVD.
There is.
That
there's a
talks about specifically how they did some of this.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, this is submarine warfare, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
You ever seen Das Boot, Dave?
No.
Really?
I've never seen that movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Check that out.
Check that out.
It's like 3.5 hours long and it's director's cut form, but yeah, it's pretty
good.
Well,
didn't the special edition of that just get released?
Yeah, I think
I believe
so.
It did. That was on Harry Knowles's.
Mm-hmm.
DVD pick list for last month, I think.
Yes. Not quite.
That, you know, and there's just some movies that you wish you could have experienced in the movie theater when it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely one of them for me. You know, another one would be The Empire Strikes Back. You know, just those kind of movies that you just wish you could have experienced with an audience. You know, and
I'm pretty sure my mother at least took me to go see Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I was 3 at the time, so I obviously don't remember it.
Right.
You know.
But, you know, like, just the shock value of it all and
mm-hmm.
not, you know, I mean, I think when I finally saw this either on video or on TV when I was really young, I mean, I think I had some idea of what was going to happen, you know, where it was going to go. And, you know, and this really is one of the movies that, you know, that I wish I could have experienced firsthand in the theater with, you know, an audience.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even if you don't remember or, you know, didn't catch it when it was first in theaters, even seeing it with a theater, like during a re-release or something,
uh-huh.
that can be pretty great too.
Yeah. Well, which we got to do with, you know, E.T. recently.
Right. With Star Wars saga,
yeah.
Or Star Wars trilogy.
Which I'm sure may happen again in the case of Star Wars.
Yeah.
You got intelligence versus experience. Kern suggests two-dimensional thinking.
On torpedoes, it was interesting to me why they decided to just do like a red glowing dot that came in like a bowling ball on the, you know, to the ship. That was interesting. Just watching. I don't even know how long this sequence is. I mean, what would be your best guess? Like a 10, 15-minute sequence? It almost feels like it takes forever.
It's pretty long, yeah.
You know, but
the tension is pretty genuine, and you do when you're sitting here like we're doing right now, and you're not trying to think of something to say to make, you know, a commentary you're doing for it. Sound halfway interesting. I mean, you are into the scene.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You are able to enjoy it. It doesn't feel like it drags. It just feels like it's.
Now that I suppose right there might be Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, this is all Industrial Light and Magic.
Yeah.
But the style effects is very much, you know, very unique.
Right.
But I really do, I pretty much ran this into the ground during, I think, our Back to the Future 2 commentary. But, I mean, these are the kind of effects, you know, early 80s, early to mid to late 80s. You know,
so basically just the
80s.
Early to mid to late 80s.
Early to mid.
So he's covering the 80s at that point.
Yeah.
you know, I really do have an affection for these kinds of effects. I just think they're really beautiful, and you won't ever, obviously you won't ever see effects like this again, just because, I mean, filmmakers have basically sold their soul to technology, and, you know, I just, you know, you're never going to see...
Well, I wouldn't say all of them.
Yeah, I would say all of them.
Some of them, yeah.
I don't know if I quite... I would say all of them sold their soul.
Yeah.
Sold their soul. Good gracious, man. You know, I mean, but, I mean, you know, I mean, models are still used a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of easier, safer to do explosions with a computer.
You know? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it, probably doing a computer base is probably one of the cheapest ways to go now. You know, I mean, just... Mm-hmm. I thought his little dying scene right here played pretty well.
Mm-hmm. This is one of those dying scenes that seems like it goes on a little longer than it probably would in real life.
Right.
Like, yeah, I've got enough time to do this.
It's still not quite up to Trinity's death scene in Matrix Revolutions.
Oh, God, which took up, what, half the running time or something like that?
That one really didn't bother me too much.
It did?
No, really?
Yeah, really.
For me, it was like watching the English paint.
Good God! I see rougher ones, I think.
Probably my favorite cue on the soundtrack. Track 8, the Genesis Countdown. It's track 7.
Jeez, man.
What?
You're like saying the exact track number.
This is deep, man. It's deep. Do you have this in your car right now?
Yeah. Well, that's what I said. I wanted to listen to it on the way over here.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I think I...
This is beautiful. What a sweet dream is around this.
I think Spock's going to do something here.
Really?
Yeah. Again, we're not Trekkies.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus, I could have said something there that I just have a little too much
I'm referring back to my... what track this cue is from on the soundtrack. You know, I'm just a big fan of this movie. I just really like this movie.
It wasn't a comic right up here, is that?
Hmm?
You said you were going to make the comic that you had two respective movies.
No, I was contemplating saying when Spock leaves, well, maybe he's just going to the bathroom. Again, have a little too much respect for this movie to say that, even though I just did.
I don't know if it's...
Oh. And we're down.
Sequel setup.
Yep.
A little transfer.
Which, Leonard Nimoy almost didn't do this.
He...
Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't really want to do this. And part of the reason they wrote... that he died was because of the fact that he didn't want to do this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then they realized, well, hey, we've got a pretty good film going here, and it could lead to some sequels, so they decided, well, you know, leave it kind of open-ended.
Mm-hmm. The mind meld, I think, was improvised on the set that day, was it not?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was improvised, but I mean, it was
for lack of
it was not in the shooting script.
Yeah. Right?
So it was something that they put added in later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right about that.
For lack of a better term, it was improvised. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's not quite it. You're going to need a little more than that. Sorry.
He's not dead yet.
Still alive?
That's messed up, man.
Moby Dick. Moby Dick. Moby Dick.
I mean, yeah, it's his whole performance, is basically.
I like the use of the Moby Dick references in First Contact, you know, with Picard and the Borg.
Mm.
I kind of like that. You know, it was kind of redundant since it had already been used here, but
right.
It was used in a different enough way with Picard and his dealings with the Borg. That's a great explosion right there.
Yeah.
It's nice. This is probably my favorite effect right there.
Yeah, that's a great shot. Pretty sweet shot.
Mm-hmm.
Jack. Good. We got a modified flight suit. Old school flight suit. Like World War II flight suit.
Jim, you better get down here. Better hurry.
This is the chair.
Just now realizing what's going on.
And this works. It's kind of obvious, the whole life and death thing. But
yeah,
right.
It works. Is that CGI right there, Dave?
No, I'm not sure. I mean, I would imagine so, but you know, I'm not quite sure.
This really is a wonderful track on the soundtrack.
Dead already.
Quite. I mean, he's dying.
I do like how this was used as the this moment was used as the opening for Star Trek 3. Star Trek 3 is
pretty good, actually.
Yeah,
it's actually not bad.
I mean, it's not to par with this one.
Right.
You had a really great villain with Christopher Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. Straightens his jacket.
Spock.
That was in rough shape. I know.
I mean, granted, I have no place to talk, but still.
It's been years, too. That's really bad.
Well, you know, what makes this movie so good, I think, is, you know, part of what makes Empire Strikes Back so good is, you know, you're seeing these characters at their most vulnerable, I guess, you know, and you're seeing some of these characters, I think, well, I really do like that line right there. I never took the Kobayashi Maru test. What do you think of my solution? I really do like that line.
In case we didn't get it beforehand, you know, but now we kind of truly see the sort of brotherhood, you know, between both Spock and Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we always knew that they, you know, we're friends, but you know,
like, my Kirk is so torn up, you know, over stock going away. Pretty deep.
Can anyone do that, actually do that with their hand?
Yeah.
The Vulcan. I just remember how long that took. I can't do it with, I can do it with my left hand, but I can't. You guys, all right. I can do it with my left hand, I can do it with my right hand.
It's not that complicated, Ron. I mean,
as a clarinet, it's kind of has to happen for me.
As a trombone player, I've got no reason. I've got no excuse.
Getting teary-eyed a couple of times because the music is so good.
I'm not really a big fan of the music, personally.
Seriously.
Personally, Dave, I'm not that big a fan of the music. I don't know what the big deal is.
What is it, because of the fact that Amazing Grace isn't written by James Horner? Or...
No, you know what? This is one of the
things. Or that it's being played on a bagpipe.
No, you know what? I was going to mention that this is probably one of my favorite cues. Probably my second favorite cue to the Genesis Countdown. And it isn't on the soundtrack. It's the melding of Amazing Grace and the score. I really do like that.
Deep. Actually, I don't think there's been a bagpipe that's ever sounded that good in movies.
Is there anything else you get the Spock die or the bagpipes? A little teary-eyed, everything.
Mm-hmm. In fact, do you have a tissue on?
Well, fine. Yeah. I'll get some. Don't worry.
No,
this is great right here.
Oh yeah.
I have to see this in the theater. I really. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I ever will, but I mean, I just know I want to.
Mm-hmm.
I can't necessarily see any of these movies ever, you know, being re-released in that format ever again. But you know, and I love that you know, this movie in particular, you know, all the Star Trek movies now are getting, you know, special edition DVD treatments. Mm-hmm. But
right.
They're actually even re-releasing the original series on DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Season box sets.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's impressive. We're not Trekkies. Romulan Ale, another... Something else that's referenced in Star Trek VI. It's kind of fun to watch... Six now, and yeah, this is really the one. This is really the one that you see Kirk at his most vulnerable. I think a lot of this comes from reshoots, doesn't it, Brian? A lot of the footage following the funeral, I think, were all you know, more or less reshoots inspired by the fact that, you know, test audiences were just not responding to how much of a downer the ending was.
Well, I think that's what led to the mind meld. is the test audiences just were flabbergasted by the idea that Spock was going to die.
Well, you know, to be honest, I know this is open to debate, of course. I mean, you know, I mean, whatever I have to say is pretty moot, I guess. But I think the mind meld was a result of how good the dailies were looking, you know, and just the response from the studio, I think, you know, and people thinking, well, you know, we've got a pretty good movie here. Let's at least attempt to set up a sequel. And then I think a lot of the reshoots that were results of what the test audience responses were, you know, is this stuff in particular, you know, the shots down on the planet of, you know, the coffin and everything.
Well, yeah, that, yeah, and, you're right about that.
And, yeah. You know, and Leonard Nimoy's voiceover at the very end,
mm-hmm.
You know. And, you know, there's some stuff, you know, there's a lot of movies where, you know, the ending has been reshot and it's just way too obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't feel like, this is all quoting from Tale of Two Cities. I think because that's the book that Spock gives Kirk
yeah.
at the very beginning. And I think, like, doesn't the beginning of the book, you know, the beginning and the ending of the book kind of bookend the movie, I think, with Kirk quoting from it. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times when he said, you know, he says at the very beginning and then at the very end he quotes the end of the book. But I think this was all just a result of, you know, test audiences' response and you know, but again, you know, reshoots seem far too obvious to me sometimes, and they don't feel like they're a part of the story or that, mm-hmm. like they ever were. But this works.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and I
the thing about reshoots though is that usually if you're doing them, that means that you've got a bad movie on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to reshoot stuff. You know, in case, like, stuff like this, and, I mean, the Lord of the
Lord
Rings
of the
trilogy
Rings, yeah.
as well, where, I mean, they're planned reshoots.
Right.
Or not reshoots necessarily, but, you know, they're planned pickups.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's because of the fact that it's an enhancement of the storytelling. Because you've got a good movie on your hands, you know the story you want to tell with it.
Yeah, Nicholas Meyer was not crazy about them, you know, acknowledging that Spock is going to return. Because he doesn't believe in resurrection.
Hmm.
So, and that's why he didn't end up doing 3.
Even when they gave him a good excuse for it? The resurrection.
Pretty, you know. Again, Dave, you know, you just have to listen to like what, you know. I mean, you have to listen to what he has to say about it. I mean, he gives his reasons. And,
gotcha.
But I mean, again, you know, he gave us a pretty great movie here. Though, you know,
Oh, and so why don't you start off the closing sequence, hey?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I more or less have spoken my mind here. I mean, I, you know, it's my favorite James Horner score. It's my favorite Star Trek movie. It's my favorite, you know, it's my favorite William Shatner performance as Kirk, you know, and, I mean, again, you know, I mean, a lot of the Star Trek films have been pretty hit and miss, especially in my opinion. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if I was lynched for saying that, you know, just because, like, I know that a lot of people have an affection for the entire series, you know, film and television and books and, you know, what have you. But this one just stands alone, in my opinion, as just one of the great space adventure movies. And so, I mean, I'll always have an affection for her. I'm going to save Dave for the last one.
Well, right? Let's not save Dave for the last one, because I don't have that much to say.
Do you not?
Brian's always the last one, because he's the man.
Okay, well, go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Yeah, so, I basically feel the same way that you do, that I have a great affection for this movie. This is probably one of my favorite movies of all time, and I can say that, easily say that for the rest of my family. A lot of it's not even, effects or anything like that. A lot of it's just, the relationship between the characters and how they're taking, those classic relationships and almost turning it up a notch through dialogue, through, interactions, through whatever. This is easily my favorite Star Trek movie, hands down, and one of my overall favorite movies.
Well, I actually don't have a whole lot to say either. Of course, I didn't have a whole lot to say during the commentary in general, and what I did have to say, I don't know how important it was.
You just discredited everything you said.
Not necessarily, I don't quite have the affection for this movie that Ron and Dave do, but I do enjoy it. It's a fun movie, and it's actually, I've enjoyed it a little more the more I've become refamiliarized with it, watching it in past months. And,
yeah, who got this for you for Christmas?
I believe that would be you. And, but, I mean, I look at this, and it's a fun movie. It's an entertaining movie. I like the story. I like the look of it, and I don't know, I really don't have a whole lot to say beyond that. So if we're all done, this is Brian Scuttle.
This would be Ronnie Haynes.
Hey, Matt.
And we're Yahoos with the microphone. Good night.